Okay. All right, I'm here. Okay, how you guys doing? Wow. So, has anyone in here ever seen a Pixar film before? I hope so. I would like to share with you guys in the next 40 minutes what has enabled and empowered the Pixar story team to be able to create so many great blockbuster movie hits in a row, and also a little bit of the behind the scenes of the data and research that we have collected to be able to make the films that we have. But before I start with this, I just want to share with you guys my story, being that this is what I've done for over 25 years, is storytelling. My story really begins with toy stores. It's no mistake that I've worked on all the Toy Story movies and, yes, Toy Story 4 that's going to come out soon. Because that's right. There you go. But my life has been surrounded with toys. When I was born into a family that owned a chain of toy stores in the San Francisco Bay Area. My mom and dad owned and ran a toy store chain called Jeffrey's Toys. But it wasn't my mom and dad that started it. It was actually my grandparents that had the stores before them. But wait, it wasn't just them. It was my great-grandparents that owned and ran the toy stores before them. Hold on. And then there was my great-great-grandfather, Charlie. He actually owned a cigar shop in San Francisco. But we have owned and operated businesses in San Francisco, from cigar shops to camera stores, but primarily toys. Who doesn't love toys, right? But the thing is, my dad, not the Smurf, the guy with the 70s beard, he did not want to take over the toy stores when he came back from Vietnam. What he wanted to do is he wanted to go off and be a Disney animator working for Walt Disney. You know, ever since he was a kid, he loved to draw cartoons. He loved movies all through high school. When he went to college for a couple of years, he went to study art. But when it came time to tell his dad, my grandfather, who was a Marine in World War II, I should add, that he wanted to be a cartoonist, animator for Walt Disney, you can imagine what the response was from the Marine, which was, "There's no way you cannot make a living as an artist. I need you to come and help me run the toy stores." So we've seen this scenario play out so many times in movies, right? You got Luke Skywalker, wants to be a fighter pilot, but Uncle Owen and Aunt Beruka say, "No, you have to stay on the farm." Similar, except my dad's not a Jedi. So my dad, he went, continued running the toy stores, and it's a good business. It's not like you're selling bombs, you're selling toys, you're making people happy. But deep down inside, my dad always wanted to be that Disney animator. And then I came along. When I was about 3 years old, I drew a picture of my dad. My dad was homesick with a stomach ache, and this was the picture I drew for him to cheer him up. You can see all the little swirls in his stomach. And when my dad saw this drawing, he made a decision for me at this point, at 3 years old, for my life, which was, "You are going to be that Disney animator." And pretty much from that point on, my dad surrounded me with natural things for kids, like animated movies and, you know, how to draw books. But being that we had the toy stores, we also had a big comic book section. He gave me every type of comic book possible. And then, when my mom would drop me off at school in the morning, elementary school, my dad would pick me up at least once a week at 11 a.m. because there was a movie we just had to see. So you can imagine, I missed out on probably, you know, about a day a week of school. But look, it paid off, right? And you know, a lot of the movies he took me to were a lot of those, you know, great films. But he also loved sci-fi and horror films. So taking your kid to see Poltergeist when they're five, not a great idea. But all of this ended up making me want to be a Disney animator. And when I graduated high school, I then went to a school, you guys probably have heard of this school, called CalArts. It's not that far from here, in Valencia, wonderful Valencia. And this was the school that Walt Disney started to be able to train animators, story people, designers, directors. You know, so many people that you guys, that so many directors and artists and story people have gone to this school, including all the almost all the Pixar directors, story people, writers, animators, we all went to CalArts. And the animation department at CalArts, I don't know if you guys know this, it's A113. And any time, if you're a Pixar fanatic like me, anytime you watch a Pixar film, you will see this number show up in all of the films. Just another Pixar trivia for you to impress your kids with. A113. So while I was at CalArts and I was studying to be that Disney animator, I made a short film. I was 19 years old, and this short animated film I made, it got me my very first job in the animation industry. And it was actually right here on Highland Boulevard, which is bizarre. It was Highland and Fountain, and it was working for The Simpsons. This short animated film that I made to just entertain my friends, it got seen by Fox and by The Simpsons, and I got hired at 19 years old as an animator. Right there on Highland and Fountain. It's a wig shop now, unfortunately, but that's where it was. And right across from the building, the animation building, was the inspiration for Apu's liquor store. That one's still there. But it was awesome experience working on The Simpsons. But I realized two things. One, I am a San Francisco, Northern California guy, and I've got to figure out a way to get back there somehow. I also discovered how The Simpsons were being written. Now, I always thought that a story was written by just one person, you know, behind a typewriter or a computer, just putting together the whole story. But I discovered at The Simpsons that it was like this team effort, this writer's room, this Saturday Night Live type of writing experience. And every week, they would write a new Simpson episode. Well, I fell in love with this. So I knew I want to get back to San Francisco somehow, and I want to learn how to write more. Well, this led me to discovering that a small studio of about 80 people that opened up in the San Francisco area called Pixar. They had not made Toy Story. All they were known for was making Listerine commercials, Lifesaver commercials, and selling RenderMan products to make logos shiny and spin and stuff, right? But to be able to sell their products, they would make little animated shorts to show what their RenderMan products would do. And these shorts were starting to win awards. They were called Lexo Jr., The Bouncing Lamp, and Tin Toy, and Knick Knack. And this was actually my very first shot I animated on Toy Story. This was my version of doing research. I screwed my high tops into a board to be able to get the right motion there. So I got hired as one of the first 12 animators at Pixar. First scene I got to animate was with the Army Men, then I got to animate Woody and Buzz. But once again, even though I got my dream of working in San Francisco, I was gravitating towards the story part again. That was my dad's dream to be the Disney animator, but that ended up leading me to falling in love with story. So I kept going to the story department, asking for little things to do after I finished my animation, and eventually they said, come on and join us. And that was about 20 years ago. And I ended up working as a storyboard artist in that writer's room, helping put together those movies that a lot of people love. I'm not gonna say all, but a lot of people have loved. And these movies have been all, just in case you've forgotten, all the Toy Story movies, the Monsters movies, Nemo, Dory, Up, Ratatouille, all those movies. And I think it really hit me one day when I was looking at Wired magazine, when they made a claim saying that Pixar has put out the most blockbuster hit movies that have been financially and publicly loved in a row more than any film studio in the history of film. And I was like, what? I thought we were just making these for fun. What the heck? And that's when I was like, what are we doing? That's so special. So what was that culture? And what is that culture that at Pixar that made these films come to life? Well, that CalArts animation culture had a big part of it. CalArts is this place where creativity is nurtured. There is art and creativity everywhere on that campus. You can't go anywhere without somebody playing an instrument, dancing, doing art. It's everywhere. And it just seems like, just like Rome, where all these great artists would all convene to one school, it seemed like that's what was going on at CalArts. This is Tim Burton. He was one of those guys who went there. And then Glenn Keane, if anybody knows Glenn Keane, he's like the best animator in the world. Animated Aladdin and, Ariel and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. The people that went to CalArts, they were encouraged to grow. They were encouraged to take chances, make mistakes, fail, learn. And that Pixar culture was then blended in with that Apple culture. Because Steve Jobs saw the potential of this Pixar group, which was owned by George Lucas at first, and he purchased that the small team of Pixar of innovators and the technology they had developed, because he had the vision of making the very first CG animated movie. Now everything is CG, but this was the first one. Now that Apple innovative culture, this is hard to see, but this is them, you know, working in the garage scenario, making Apple computer. That culture of innovation, of taking chances, and also having a guy with a lot of money that believed in us, that blended together with the technology that had been making the Pixar company grow at Industrial Light and Magic, that's the George Lucas company. Those three things is what made Pixar so great. And at ILM with George Lucas, this was the first attempts of doing CG special effects. So they were bringing the technology, Steve Jobs was bringing the innovation, and then this CalArts, John Lasseter group was bringing the art. And that is what created this place, the left side, not the right side, where creativity flourished, where art, technology, and innovation had a place to live. And the work environment at Pixar, the way I always describe it, it's like what your 12-year-old bedroom looks like. Because the whole building is a place that inspires creativity. Now, even the tables at Pixar are made to be round. So it eliminates hierarchy. Right? There's nothing worse than when having a long rectangle table. You know who's going to sit at the front, right? But even creating an environment that diminishes hierarchy, where all ideas can be thrown out, was another way that to create this culture at Pixar, to be able to create a place where there was no hierarchy. Oh. When people aren't having any fun, they seldom produce any good work. What do you expect if you put people in a bunch of gray cubes? Well, you know, you're gonna probably not get a lot of happy people. I mean, even that color gray, right? So, anybody can design their space any way they want at Pixar. And I've noticed when I go to speak at companies, the places that end up having creative, fun environments inspire creative, fun ideas and people. Yes, somebody actually built a castle for an office at Pixar. There are more bars at Pixar than there is in all of Emeryville, the city where Pixar is located. And you can design your space any way you want. That guy came in on the weekend and carved a giant mouse hole in his wall, also cutting through wires, which was bad. But that's been we have to get approval for things like that now. But this environment, is one that inspires creativity. And also, There's a number of things to be able to help with people's health. We don't want to end up just killing people while they're making films and shorts and specials. We want people to keep healthy. And so this people, process, and perseverance at Pixar is really what has created an environment that has been able to sustain so many great movies for so long. Because the techniques we're using at Pixar to create great stories are really the same ones that everybody else is using. But we're just creating an environment that eliminates fear and eliminates this competition, and it's more of this teamwork and working together to make something great. How do we do that? Well, one of the things we have is this creative accountability. We call it a brain trust. And this creative accountability means while you are a director creating something awesome, taking chances, failing, losing a bunch of money for the company, we're still going to be checking in with you to make sure you're headed in the right direction. Because it's okay to fail, and it's okay if you're spending money to take chances. We look at it as, you know, like research and development. But you want to make sure that you're still checking in with your fellow directors. One of the unique things at Pixar is that the writers, directors, animators, and technicians, they stay at Pixar. They don't go from one project to the next, going to, you know, the company across the street. They're really there for the long run. I mean, for me to say being at Pixar for over 20 years, how many people can say they've been anywhere for over 20 years? It's like not normal. But being that we have this relationship with one another, it's like we're friends. We're all working together to make something great. So when we give feedback on each other's projects we're working on, we're giving feedback like you would give to a friend, right? You want to be candid. You want to tell the truth. But you want to do it in a way that's going to have mutual respect and kindness. You also want to make sure that you're always thinking about the balance. How much time do these people have to make what they're making? How much of a budget do they have? So when we're giving notes on each other's work, we're making sure we're honest. We're making sure that we're brief and very specific with our notes, and that we're also giving notes quickly. We're not trying to let too much time pass, because as one of the guys said up here, it's okay to fail, just fail fast, right? That's the key. This yes and type of feedback that we've been giving each other at Pixar, it's almost like improv. It's like you're up on stage with a bunch of your improv teammates, and if you guys start to fail on stage, we all fail together. But if we all turn it around and succeed together, we're all going to succeed together. So we're always doing this yes and. We're never cutting each other down. We're always building each other up. I feel like the Beatles did this. The Beatles, I know, I'm not going to compare Pixar to the Beatles at all right? But that Beatles teamwork writing process, it seemed this very, we're working together. We're in this together. I loved how John, he called it writing eyeball to eyeball. You're right there with each other, giving each other feedback, pushing each other forward. I heard this thing, interview with Paul McCartney. I find this interesting. I hope this has something to do with what I'm talking about right now. But Paul McCartney said that every time they would make a new album, they would always get in the studio and they'd listen to the last album they just made. And then they said, okay, that was the last thing we did. Now let's push it and do what's the next thing. I just felt like that was very inspiring of not wanting to keep doing the same thing, but keep pushing yourself. Fear and failing is probably what keeps us from pushing things forward and wanting to keep creating and innovating. But if you're in a environment, in a culture that encourages you to take chances, then you're going to end up pushing the boundaries. You're going to do what Steve Jobs said, putting a dent in the universe. Sometimes the mistakes we've made have been really big. The failures that we have made that we thought were going to work out eventually lost us a lot of money. But we kept taking chances. One of them was the movie, the Pixar movie, Newt. Did anybody see that movie? Chances are you didn't because it never got made. But we worked on it for 2 years and spent a lot of money making it. But we realized as we were continuing to try to make it better that it reached a point where it wasn't progressing. It was a combination between the director wasn't ready to direct, and also the big part was the whole premise of Newt is one Newt has to have sex with another Newt to make more blue Newts. Kind of hard to communicate that with kids. So, but you know what? From entertainment to technology, the great creators on this planet that have existed are the ones that take chances. That's why I love, even when Elon Musk is blowing stuff up, you know, he's blowing up spaceships and stuff, he keeps pushing the boundaries. I love that. I miss Steve. I worked with Steve from when I was 21 till he passed away. Steve Jobs was always pushing the boundaries, you know. And I miss that with Apple, that you keep on pushing things, keep innovating. On Toy Story, Toy Story had probably the most story versions and most failures of any Pixar film that was ever made. The very first Woody that we, you know, wrote dialogue for and created a story, a version of that Toy Story version, he was so mean and kind of evil that when the Disney company saw this, they said, there is no way we are putting this out. They said, first off, you didn't want to make a fairy tale. You didn't want to have a prince or princess singing their I Want song. And it's CG animation. And you have this bitter cowboy. So, instead of just giving up, we kept rewriting, rewriting, revising, revising, until we came up with the Woody that you guys love today. Sully on Monsters University, if anybody saw that movie, we had to figure out what Sully's character would be like. And when we're discovering who the character is and we're making the mistakes and we're failing and we're taking chances, we go through so many iterations of these characters. At first, we had Sully as the A student at Monsters University. We said, no, that's not going to work. Then we thought maybe Sully would be can't even afford to go to university, so he was a janitor. So I brainstormed ideas on what it would be like for a slacker guy as a janitor. And, you know, this takes me a day or two to come up with different ideas. And then I thought, well, what if he meets his old best friend, Mike? They went to elementary school. And Mike does want to be a scarer. He does want to be a scarer at the university. And so Sully helps him. And then I said, well, okay, wait, Sully's not going to be a janitor. Maybe he's a librarian. Maybe he learns to scare through stacking books. These are all ridiculous ideas, of course, okay? But we have to get through the ridiculous stuff to get to the good stuff. So I explored ideas for him being a librarian and what that would mean to helping him learn to be a better scarer, you know, collecting books, that happens, right? And then there was the Sully, the party animal version. So I'm just giving you a little look into what happens at Pixar, okay? And then, you know, maybe he's so good at scaring that he doesn't care and he just parties all the time. Went through this version for a while. And the entire time, I know these drawings will never be seen, except if I'm doing a talk. They'll never be on the screen, but they're all working towards making the best version of this story. And then there was Sully, the arrogant slacker. Because the entire time, we think that Sully is the main character of Monsters University. But then, on this last stage, and trust me, but at this point I've done thousands of drawings and I'm starting to get a little disheartened. But at this version, I start to realize, and the director and writer, we realize, it's not Sully's story. Sully is not the main character. It's Mike Wazowski. And all of these ideas of having a roommate that's a mess came from my roommate up at CalArts. This is my roommate, Todd. I won't tell you his last name. And I actually did this. I put tape down the middle of the floor. And you know, 1,000 drawings later of, you could look at them as failing, but I look at them as research and development, led to who our main character was. But if we wanted to have taken so many chances of revising and rewriting and redrawing, we wouldn't have gotten to the good stuff. So like the gentleman said up here, the key to failure is fail early and fail fast. Be wrong as fast as you can. But don't be afraid of taking chances. Don't be afraid of pushing the boundaries. And I know we all deal with this. Deadlines versus quality. But you know what? That's not a bad thing. The best thing for an artist is not to have more time. Forgive me if you're an artist in here for what I'm about to say. But the best thing for an artist is deadlines. Deadlines, a little fire under the butt, that will inspire you to get moving and fail fast. All right? So this saying is a saying we've used at Pixar for a long time, the ugly baby and the hungry monster. And what this means is that when an idea is developing, your new IP is developing, it's ugly. It's not developed. The characters are not great yet. The world is not great yet. But just like a little baby that can't walk yet, that can't speak yet, you can't just get rid of the baby because it just doesn't come out walking and talking. You got to let it grow. You have to help it mature. At the same time, you do have a hungry monster. Those are all the people saying, give us stuff to animate. We're running out of money. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Those two things actually work good together because it helps the baby mature, the idea mature as quick as it can, and the hungry monster is keeping us on track. Because Pixar, and I'm sure all of you guys, we don't work at nonprofit organizations. We have to sell tickets. We have to get people in seats. So we need to make stuff and get it done. The key is making things fast and cheap is something to work towards, but it's not the goal. In the end, what's going to keep the brand strong and what's going to make people love in your story is if it is great. So let that be a good motivator to do things quick and cheap, but quality has got to be the best thing. When people and companies consciously or unconsciously avoid taking risks, avoid pushing things, then we go into this kind of world where we start resting on our laurels. We say, hey, The Lion King was awesome. Let's make 12 of them. Oh, boy. And what you do is you end up hurting the brand, right? So you want to keep pushing yourself. The tricky thing is when to innovate. When everything's going great, why rock the boat? Keep it going. Well, you have to be like the Beatles, where you listen to your last record and you say, what is the next thing the Beatles need to do? And we made Toy Story, Bugs Life, Toy Story 2, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, all blockbuster successes. Everybody loved them. But we were looking at the movies we were making and we were saying, what's next? And we pushed ourselves to innovate. We didn't wait for people to say, boy, are you guys still gonna make buddy pictures? We pushed ourselves. And we did things like The Incredibles and Up and Ratatouille. I mean, look at those things. First off, who is going to buy, McDonald's was probably not happy when we wanted to put out Ratatouille, right? How are you gonna put rat toys in Happy Meals? For the movie Up, how are you going to sell cute plush old men dolls at the Disney store? But we needed to push it. We needed to make new things. That work environment at Pixar, I showed you some pictures of what that's like. But I think for all of us, we want to be creatively fulfilled and challenged. And I feel one of the ways to do this, to be able to keep us fulfilled and challenged, is offering things at work that pushes your employees, pushes you. You always want to stay a student. You never want to reach a place where you're just resting on your laurels. I've reached the top. I don't have to learn anymore. The key to keep yourself innovative, fresh, coming up with ideas still, is to stay a student. Keep learning and then teach it back. So offering an education stipend at your company, it doesn't have to be big. To either let people do oil painting or go to Comic-Con. They can use it for whatever they want. Pixar even allows people to work on personal projects. And it's not Disney or Pixar owned. They can make movies on the side, comic books, how to draw books, short animated pictures, and having classes at work. There are the weirdest classes that are offered at Pixar. Everything from, yes, life drawing, but then tango classes or sword fighting classes. Things that just keep you challenged and growing and learning. And the other thing we do to be able to push us, to be able to keep coming up with great ideas, is we get out there and we meet people. We see new worlds, we see, get new ideas this way. And on every film, we do research. Ratatouille, that was awesome. Go to Paris, right? Eat French food. That was the best. Nemo, that one was great too. Australia, go to the Great Barrier Reef. Very nice. Cars, I was like, oh boy, you're telling me I have to go in the middle of the United States in the summer with a bunch of my friends in a car, meeting all of the crazy people on Route 66. This sounds like a nightmare. But then when we got the Pixar credit card and realized we could buy lots of alcohol and fireworks, then it became more fun. And we ended up meeting so many interesting people on Route 66 and interesting places that became the inspiration for Mater, for Sally, for Doc. And those people out there on Route 66 know it's them. Toy Story 3, not so great. We went to the dumps. I think it knocked off like 5 years of my life breathing in this stuff. But remember when the toys have to go to the garbage dump and they almost get melted down? To create that illusion of life at Pixar, we do this research. Now, we do the research to help create the story and the characters and the world, but we also collect the research to be able to make things look realistic. And we come up with those programs, right? We come up with that technology to be able to make things look real. Hair, skin, cloth, it's not easy. But in the end, the most important thing is what those characters are thinking and feeling. And the best research to be able to do for that is to really look at ourselves as people. I really feel that one of the reasons why people connect so successfully with the Pixar characters, why the Pixar characters create so much empathy with the audience, is because of the data and the research we've collected with psychologists and psychiatrists that have helped us figure out the actual way that people's eye movement works, where people's IQs go to when they are remembering images or things they've heard or things that they have felt kinetic. And when they're making them up, lying, a visual image, a sound, or kinetic. There was this guy, Paul Ekman, and he collected research studying people all around the world, and he realized that people's eyes go to a certain location when they are telling the truth and remembering visual moments, remembering audio moments, or remembering how things felt. Everybody around the world does this. And when they are making up the memory, they look to the different side. When we were animating Woody and Buzz on Toy Story, we looked at his research. We started using it in our characters, and I feel that it gave us an even better chance to connect with our audience. Because, you know, Pixar gets almost teased for being the company that makes the movies that make people feel something. I think this is a big reason, is simply because we have collected the research so that when you are watching a toy, a rat, a car, a robot, and you see how the character's acting, it's like you're looking in a mirror. And it's similar to, it's something that you can relate to, it connects to you, and it creates empathy between you and the character. Then we reached Inside Out. How do you collect research on what goes on inside of a 12-year-old girl's head? I have a 3-year-old right now. I'm having a tough enough time as it is. I can only imagine what 12-year-old is gonna be like. But to be able to figure out the emotions that make our decisions, because we wanted to create a film where our main characters were gonna be the emotions inside of a 12-year-old girl's head. We wanted to make sure that the way the world inside of this little girl's head was developed, that there was truth in it. That if we actually went to psychologists and scientists, they would say, yes, that is the way the brain works. There are certain islands of personalities. So we ended up going through, making sure we did our job. We got our research to be able to create where all of our memories go, where our dreams come to life, where our imagination happens. We made sure it was based in truth. If we would have just made things up without any research, it wouldn't have been as strong train of thought. So psychologists like Paul Ekman and Dasher, fortunately these were guys that were close to us in California. They were over at UC Berkeley. So we could be checking in with them all the time. And when we wanted to create our emotion characters, we looked at what are all the universal motions around the world. And we discovered that the 7 universal emotions that everybody has all around the world are anger, contempt, fear, disgust, happiness, sadness, and surprise. And for anybody that's gone to a great movie, you realize that you have to have a reason for why your characters are in the movie. So we had to eliminate some of these because they were too similar. For example, fear and surprise, a little too similar. So we combined those. And our main characters for the movie Inside Out, based on research, were anger, fear, this is the one my wife says I fall in, disgust, happiness. I should also put a little shout out to my wife, who also works at Pixar as a story artist, and Joy was modeled off of her. She has this short haircut, not blue hair, but it looks like her. And sadness. So creating a culture that inspires creativity, that allows people to take chances and fail, but keeps pushing the boundaries, keeps creating new things, that is what that culture has done. And then being able to collect research and data to be able to push the stories and characters to make a stronger connection with the audience, that has been our goal. But our goal is not to just mimic real life. It's to be able to take what we learn and then to be able to create a story around it that inspires people. I'm going to leave you with one clip, and it's how we took all of that information, data, and research for Inside Out to be able to create this world.
Anyway, these are Riley's memories, and they're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag. But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories. Each one came from a super important time in Riley's life. Like when she first scored a goal. Oh, that was so amazing. Memory powers a different aspect of Riley's personality. Like Hockey Island. Goofball Island is my personal favorite.
Come back here, you little monkey!
Yep, Goofball is the best.
Thank you so much for inviting me to come here to be able to talk about what has made Pixar great and how helpful it is to be able to have this research to keep pushing the boundaries to being able to create great stories and characters. Thank you.
Matthew Lunn, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Matthew. Awesome.